Chapter number 66, Incidence of Taxation. Page number 804, Meaning of Incidence. The problem of the incidence of a tax is the problem of who pays it. Taxes are not always borne by the people who pay them in the first instance. They are sometimes shifted on to other people. Incidence means the final resting place of a tax. Thus, incidence is on the man who ultimately bears the money burden of the tax. New concept of incidence. To determine as to who bears the money burden of the tax is the conventional meaning of incidence. Some modern economists like Ursula Hicks and Musgrave have introduced a new concept of incidence. According to this new concept, incidence means the changes brought about in income distribution by changes in the budgetary policy, that is, changes both in taxes and public expenditure. The difference between the traditional concept and the new concept may be carefully noted. In the conventional sense, incidence refers simply to the money burden of a tax, but the new concept refers to distributional changes resulting both from taxation and public expenditure. Impact and incidence. We may distinguish between impact and incidence. The impact of a tax is on the person who pays it in the first instance, and the incidence is on the one who finally bears it. If an excise duty is imposed on sugar, it is paid in the first instance by the sugar manufacturer. The impact is therefore on him. But the duty will be added to the price of the sugar sold, which, through a series of transfers, will ultimately fall on the consumer of sugar. The incidence is therefore on the final consumer. Incidence and effects. The term incidence should be distinguished from the effects of taxation. The effect of a tax refers to incidental results of the tax. There are several consequences of the imposition of tax which are quite distinct from the problem of incidence. The imposition of an excise duty on sugar, we have seen, is shifted ultimately to the consumer of sugar. The incidence is on the consumer. But the effects of this duty may be far-reaching. A heavy excise duty may cripple the industry. The manufacturer's profits will be reduced. Wages may be reduced. Labor and capital may have to leave the industry. Thousands of middlemen engaged in the distribution of sugar may find their earnings reduced. Reshuffling of their family budgets may affect the demand for certain other goods. The consumption of sugar may decrease, and that of its substitutes may increase. All these are the effects of the tax. It is a much wider problem as distinguished from the incidence, which is a narrow and special problem of finding who bears the money burden of the tax. Page number 805. Money burden and real burden. We may also distinguish between the money burden of a tax and its real burden. The money burden of a tax is represented by the total amount of money received by the treasury. If a consumer has to spend rupees 5 more per month on the sugar consumed by him on account of the levy of a duty on sugar, it is the money burden that he has to bear. But he may have reduced the consumption of sugar, which may mean a reduction of his economic welfare. He may have to pinch in the consumption of some other commodities too. This pinching, inconvenience, sacrifice, or, in short, loss of economic welfare is the real burden of the tax. In incidence, we are concerned with the money burden and not the real burden. Importance of incidence. The study of incidence is very important. A tax system is not merely aimed at raising a certain amount of revenue, but the aim is to raise it from those sections of the people who can best bear the tax. The aim, in short, is to secure a just distribution of the tax burden. This obviously cannot be done unless an effort is made to trace the incidence of each tax. We must know who pays it ultimately in order to find out whether it is just to ask him to pay it or whether the burden imposed on him is according to the ability of the taxpayer or not. If the tax system is to conform to Adam Smith's first canon of taxation, that is, the canon of equality, it becomes imperative to make a careful study of the reactions and repercussions of each tax and find out its final resting place. There are certain taxes called direct taxes, which are borne by the people who pay them first. The incidence in such cases is apparent. But the tax system of a country is not merely composed of direct taxes. There are indirect taxes also, whose reactions are a complicated affair. These taxes are intended to be shifted. But in actual practice, on account of economic friction, the shifting may not take place at all, or it may be partial, or the tax may be shifted on to a class of people quite different from those intended to bear it. If public finance is to serve as an instrument of social justice, the question of incidence at once assumes great importance. The rich have to be taxed and the proceeds have to be spent for the benefit of the poor. If we have to tax the rich, the incidence must be on the rich, otherwise the object is not served. We must therefore follow each tax and make sure that it finds a rich home to rest in. Factors determining incidence. It would appear that the incidence of a tax, or where its ultimate burden rests, depends on a number of factors. We give below some of them in a summary way. 1. Elasticity. While considering incidence, we consider both elasticity of demand and elasticity of supply. If the demand for the commodity taxed is elastic, the tax will tend to be shifted to the producer, but in case of inelastic demand, it will be largely borne by the consumer. In case of elastic supply, the burden will tend to be on the purchaser, and in the case of inelastic supply, on the producer. 2. Price. Since shifting of the tax burden can only take place through a change in price, this is a very important factor. If the tax leaves the price unchanged, the tax does not shift. 3. Time. In the short run, the producer cannot make any adjustment in plant and equipment. If therefore the demand falls on account of price rise resulting from the tax, he may not be able to reduce supply and may have to bear the tax to some extent through loss of profit resulting from a fall in demand. In the long period, however, full adjustment can be made and the tax shifted to the consumer. 4. Cost. Tax raises the price. Rise in price reduces demand, and reduced demand results in the reduction of output. But a change in the scale of production affects cost, and the effect will vary accordingly as the industry is decreasing, increasing, or constant cost industry. For instance, if the industry is subject to decreasing cost, a reduction in the scale of production will raise the cost and hence price shifting the burden of the tax to the consumer. 5. Nature of the tax. A tax, for instance, on surplus or windfall will tend to remain where it is levied. 6. Market form. Under perfect competition, no single producer or single purchaser can affect the price. Hence, shifting of the tax in either direction is out of question. Page number 806. But under monopoly, a producer is in a position to influence price and hence shift the tax. Incidence of a tax on monopoly will be discussed in detail shortly. Direct and indirect taxes. Distinction between the direct taxes and indirect taxes. We have said before that the question of incidence is very simple in the case of a direct tax because the impact and the incidence are on the same person. But in the case of an indirect tax, the impact is on the person and the incidence on another. A direct tax is not intended to be shifted, whereas an indirect tax is so intended. The question of incidence, therefore, really arises in the case of indirect taxes. Taxes on commodities are generally called indirect taxes, for they are ultimately shifted completely or partially into the consumers, whereas they are first collected from the dealers or producers. But we should remember that the mere fact that a tax is a commodity tax does not make it an indirect tax. A tax can be called an indirect tax if its burden can be shifted, and this happens when its price is affected by the tax. It is just possible that the commodity may be taxed, yet its price may remain unaffected. In this case, the consumer is not touched, and the tax will be called direct and not indirect, even though it is a tax on a commodity. A lump sum tax is imposed on a monopolist or as a percentage of monopoly net revenue. A lump sum tax is imposed on a monopolist or as a percentage of monopoly net revenue is not shifted, while a monopoly tax in proportion to the output tends to be shifted. In the former case, it will be a direct tax, and in the latter, it will be indirect. The inheritance tax is commonly considered a direct tax. It falls on the successor and it tends to stay there. But the predecessor, while he was alive, may have taken an insurance policy to cover the amount of the tax. In this case, it imposes an indirect money burden on him. Income tax again is a direct tax, but in exceptional cases, a part of it may be shifted. To that extent, it will become an indirect tax. We may thus conclude by saying that we cannot draw hard and fast lines between taxes which are direct and those which are indirect. The distinction between the two types is settled by the question whether the tax has been shifted or not. If it is shifted, it is indirect, otherwise direct. Relative merits and demerits of direct and indirect taxes. We compare these two forms of taxes not with the object of choosing whether we should have the one or the other. No country relies exclusively on one type. Both direct and indirect taxes are needed to make up an equitable and adequate tax system. "I can never think," said the great Scotsman, "of direct and indirect taxation, except as I should think of two attractive sisters who have been introduced into the gay world of London, each with an ample fortune, both having the same parentage, for the parents of both I believe to be necessity and invention, differing only as sister may differ. However, direct taxes are better in some respects and indirect taxes in some other respects." Merits of direct taxes. The following merits are claimed for direct taxes. 1. Equitable. Direct taxes are more equitable as progression can be applied to them. The rate of the tax is varied to make the tax conform to the ability to pay. 2. Economical. They are economical as the cost of collection is small. There being no intermediary between the taxpayer and the state, no part of the tax evaporates in transit. 3. Certain. The yield of direct taxes can be calculated with a fair degree of precision. The taxpayer is also certain of the amount that he has to pay. 4. Elastic. Direct taxes have a high degree of elasticity. Income tax has remarkably responded to the enormously enhanced needs of the state of defense and development. 5. Civic consciousness. They create a civic consciousness among the taxpayers. A man who pays a direct tax feels that he is contributing towards the state expenditure. He is expected to take keener interest in civic affairs. Page number 807. 6. Reduction of inequalities. Progressive taxes are used as an instrument for the reduction of economic inequalities. The rich persons are called upon to pay taxes at a higher rate so that the gulf between the rich and the poor is narrowed down. However, economic inequalities cannot be reduced by taxes alone. Public expenditure should also be so directed as to benefit the poor more than the rich. Demerits. The following are the chief demerits of direct taxes. 1. Inconvenient. Direct taxes are very inconvenient to pay. Every taxpayer feels the pinch. The tax has to be paid in a lump sum. The filing of returns is a complicated affair and there is a lot of harassment. 2. Unpopular. Direct taxes are very unpopular. Nobody likes to pay them. To part with money is not an easy thing, especially when there is no direct quid pro quo. 3. Evasion. They can be easily evaded and the state defrauded of its due. That is why it is said that a direct tax is a tax on honesty. 4. Arbitrary. The direct taxes are arbitrary in the sense that the rates of taxes are fixed arbitrarily by the government. The rate could be as well be different. The rates are not determined on any scientific principle. Leftist government will fix higher rates and a rightist government lower rates. It is all arbitrary. Merits of indirect taxation. Some advantages of indirect taxes are given below. 1. Convenient. An indirect tax is convenient. We pay the tax when we buy a commodity and a time when we can afford it. It is paid in small trickles rather than in a lump sum. Many people prefer to be taxed in the dark. The taxpayer does not feel that he is paying it. The tax is wrapped in the price of the commodity he buys. 2. No evasion. It's very difficult to evade an indirect tax because it is mixed up with the price of the commodity one purchases. 3. Equitable. Indirect taxes can also be made more equitable by being imposed on articles generally consumed by the rich. That is why luxuries are generally taxed at a higher rate. 4. Elastic. When imposed on necessaries of life or articles for which the demand is inelastic, indirect taxes are also fairly elastic. They can therefore be varied according to the state needs. 5. Beneficial social effects. Indirect taxes have a beneficial social effect in that the consumption of harmful drugs and intoxicants can be discouraged by means of such taxes. 6. Capital formation. Indirect taxes are levied on the consumption of commodities. In this way, consumption is reduced. The savings so made can be invested in some productive employment. 7. Reallocation of resources. Taxation of some commodities will discourage their production. The resources used in their production may be utilized in the production of more desirable commodities. In this way, resources devoted to the production of luxuries can be diverted to the production of goods required by the masses. 8. Wide coverage. Indirect taxes can be levied on a large number of commodities. In this way, larger sections of consuming public can be made to contribute to the public exchequer. In India, the tax net of central excise duties is being spread wider and wider. 9. Productive. Since they can be given a wide coverage, indirect taxes can be very productive. It is the Indian experience that union excise duties and sales tax have yielded a very substantial revenue and have become the mainstay of the respective governments. 10. Reduce disincentiveness of direct taxation. Since indirect taxes have proved very productive of revenue, it has obviated the necessity of steeply progressive direct taxation, which would have been very disincentive of saving and investment. Demerits. The following are some of the disadvantages of indirect taxes. 1. Uncertain. Indirect taxes are uncertain. It is not always possible to anticipate the various repercussions of a tax imposed on a commodity. A finance minister cannot precisely calculate the estimated yield of a tax. 2. Regressive. They are regressive. Every consumer of the taxed commodity, rich or poor, pays the tax at the same rate. Therefore, the real burden of the tax on the poor is greater than on the rich. If the tax is imposed on the necessities of life, its regressive character is accentuated. According to Engel's law of consumption, the bulk of a poor man's income is spent on necessities of life. The poor man pays the tax, therefore, on almost all his income, while the rich man pays it on a relatively smaller portion of the income spent on necessities of life. Page number 808. 3. No civic consciousness. Indirect taxes do not develop any civic consciousness in the taxpayer, because nobody feels that he is paying a tax as it is concealed in the price. 4. Uneconomical. Although the shopkeeper is considered an unpaid tax collector, yet it is though that the cost of collection of certain indirect taxes is very heavy. In the case of customs duties, a highly paid staff of custom officials, appraisers, raiding parties to prevent smuggling have to be engaged. These taxes are uneconomical in another way as well. The taxed commodity passes through a number of middlemen, and each middleman adds something to the tax so that the final consumer pays much more than what the state receives. 5. Inflationary. The indirect taxes have one serious danger, especially in developing countries, that is, they contribute to the inflationary pressures in the economy. Every tax levied on a commodity must inevitably raise its price, and if prices are already rising, it feeds inflation. 6. Evasion. Certain of the indirect taxes are easily evaded. For example, excise duty on manufactured goods are collected at the factory gate when the goods roll out. But one cannot be sure that all goods going out actually pay the duty, for there may be leakages. Similarly, if a tax is levied on the farm products, the portion consumed by the grower escapes taxation. 7. Loss of economic welfare. Taxation on commodities raises their price. But in the case of goods produced under the conditions of the law of increasing returns or decreasing cost, the price rises more than the cost. In this case, the consumers suffer and the community suffers a loss of economic welfare. Conclusion. The distinction between direct taxes and indirect taxes is not of much practical importance. We cannot assume that the entire burden of direct taxation falls on the rich and that of indirect taxation on the poor. Indirect taxes, like taxes on luxuries, fall on the rich and not on the poor. It is, however, generally true that direct taxes like inheritance tax and income tax and super tax fall exclusively on the rich. In a good tax system, we must have a proper balance between direct and indirect taxation. One corrects the other. Indirect taxation relieves exclusive pressure on the rich and makes the system of taxation broad-based. Thus, the two taxes are complementary. A good tax system has a goodly proportion of both types. Role of indirect taxation in a developing economy. Indirect taxes have to play a very important role in a developing economy. This is due to the fact that owing to general poverty and low level of GNP or low individual incomes, the scope for direct taxes is limited, or their yield is comparatively very low. For instance, in India, wealth tax, death duties, gift tax, etc. do not yield much. Hence, greater and greater reliance has to be placed on indirect taxes. No wonder that range of union excise duties in India is becoming wider and wider every year. Indirect taxation has proved to be a very potent weapon of resource mobilization. They raise the rate of investment by curtailing consumption and raising the incremental ratio of saving. The developing countries have to rely more on indirect taxes for the following main reasons. In the first place, low levels of income in the underdeveloped countries provide only a limited scope for direct taxation. Example, income tax and wealth tax. The tax net can be spread much wider through commodity taxation. Even commodities of universal consumption can be taxed to raise adequate revenues. Secondly, indirect taxation is especially important from the point of view of economic growth, on which such countries have set their heart. To accelerate economic growth, the rates of saving and investment must be raised sufficiently. This cannot be done without curtailing consumption, and in these countries, propensity to consume is notoriously high. Duesenberry's demonstration effect operates very sharply. To tax commodities is the only effective way of putting curbs on consumption and release funds for productive investment. Page number 809. Thirdly, indirect taxation also transfers the growing agricultural surplus from the rural to the urban areas by taxing the farm sector and by checking consumption on the part of the newly prosperous farmers. In the words of Taxation Inquiry Commission, for any substantial receipts from commodity taxation and appreciable restraints on consumption in the economy as a whole, it will be necessary to extend excise and sales taxation to the consumption of lower income groups and of goods which are commonly classed as necessaries.
Reference note, Report, Volume 1, P149.
The basic objective is to raise resource for public investment, and indirect taxes play a significant role in bringing about diversions of resources from consumption to production and from private sector to public sector. By means of taxation, the government acquires purchasing power from the people and then uses the funds so raised in productive investment, which is essential for rapid economic growth. Incidence of some taxes. Incidence of taxes on personal income. Income tax, super tax, excess profit tax are all direct taxes and are as such borne by the people who pay them in the first instance. They cannot ordinarily be shifted. But a businessman who is in an exceptionally strong position relative to the persons he deals with may be able to shift a part of the tax to his customers. Maybe that he is the seller of a very popular brand. Maybe that he is the seller of a very popular doctor in whom his patients have implicit faith. In such cases, the patients may be willing to pay a bit more. But these conditions are rarely present, and the income taxpayers must ordinarily bear the burden of the tax. A tax on the businessman's income has no influence on price, which is determined by demand and supply. Businessman's income depends on his profits. Profit depends on price and not vice versa. A tax on profit, therefore, cannot be passed on to the consumer by raising the price. In the long run, however, a heavy tax may check enterprise by reducing the anticipated profits. But it will depend on elasticity of supply and alternative channels of investment available. It is very difficult to say what will happen in the long run. Probability is that a moderate tax will not have any undesirable repercussions. If, however, the income tax is extremely heavy, it may discourage saving, check accumulation of capital, or drive it abroad. The productive capacity of the community will thus be impaired, and there will be widespread repercussions of such a heavy tax. But the tax is seldom so heavy. Ordinarily, therefore, it rests on those on whom it is imposed. A heavy income tax may discourage incentive and enterprise. This, however, will depend on whether the tax falls on average income or marginal income. In the former case, the taxpayer is transferred to a lower income group, and he must work harder to maintain his customary standard of living. If the increase in tax falls mainly on the marginal income, it will mean a positive discouragement to the earning of that income. How far actually the enterprise will be affected will depend on the taxpayer's ability to vary his income, and hence his liability to be taxed by varying his effort. Ordinarily, few workers have the ability to vary their income by varying their effort. Only when there is a great demand for overtime, they may be able to do so. Incidence of corporation tax. It is a tax on companies. It is imposed on the net profit of the corporations or joint stock companies. Reducing the fund available for reinvestment, the corporation tax mitigates against expansion and development. Also, the amount available to be distributed as dividends is reduced. This also serves as a disincentive to the investing public. Capital formation is checked thereby. Thus, the flow of equity capital is checked. The prices of goods manufactured by such corporations rise, which may give place to cheaper substitutes, resulting in a shift of resources in their favor. Further, since corporation taxes discourage investment, the level of national income and employment is reduced. Page number 810. If, however, the corporation which is taxed maintains the dividend rate by paying dividend out of the undistributed profits, then neither is consumption reduced nor the flow of equity capital checked. A corporation tax, by reducing the earnings of the existing firms, discourages the entry of new firms into the industry, which may result in a monopoly or a semi-monopoly for the existing firms with all the attendant evils. Further, its distinctive effect may lower efficiency. A part of the corporation tax may be shifted to the buyers through a price rise. Incidence of tax on profits. The problem of incidence of tax on profits is complicated by the fact that there is difference of opinion among the economists about the definition of profits and the elements that compose it. Some economists, like Professor Walker, regard profits as analogues to rent. In this sense, profit is a surplus earned by the entrepreneur superior to the marginal entrepreneur. The price in the market is determined by the marginal producer. Hence, profits like rent do not enter into price. It cannot therefore be shifted to the consumer. It will be borne by the businessman who pays it. This is Walker's view. But we do not subscribe to this view. Even the marginal entrepreneur must have profit in the long run. Normal profit is therefore not a surplus but a part of the necessary cost. This, however, does not lead us to the conclusion that tax on profit will be shifted to the consumer unless the entrepreneur is able to influence the price, which he rarely can. For an individual entrepreneur, price in the market is fixed. That being so, a tax on his profit must come out of his own pocket. A general tax on profits, as a rule, is not shifted unless the price is rising rapidly and the consumers are anxious to buy. This, however, is very rare. But if the tax is a special one on profits from a particular trade and industry, there will be a tendency on the part of the entrepreneurs to withdraw themselves from such lines. If this happens, the incidence will ultimately be shifted to the consumers of the commodity or the users of the service supplied by the entrepreneurs. A great deal depends upon the elasticity of demand and the mobility of capital. A tax on profits may take the form of a license duty. Even this will be borne by the producer. In order to reimburse himself, the producer may increase his output. The consumer benefits, but the incidence of license duty will remain on the producer. It is generally too small to make the producer try to shift it. Although complete exemption of profits from taxation is not desirable, yet a high tax is highly undesirable. It will put a brake on invention and enterprise, and it will cut down revenues and thus hinder modernization of a plant. In the words of Mrs. Hicks, the effect of an additional tax on profits on a curve of expected returns is to shift the curve bodily to the left, but without altering its shape or the chance of loss. The chance of very high gains, which formerly balanced the big chance of loss in the risky investment curve, is thus cut off, and the scales are consequently tipped against it, while the safe investment, being relatively unaffected, will become more attractive. The discrimination of high profits tax against venture capital is serious for any country that means to keep abreast of modern development. It is perhaps especially serious in an established industrial equipment and where consequently new enterprise needs to be especially on the alert. This tax has also important cyclical relevance. In depression, curves of expected returns flatten out. Many normally safe investments pass into the risky class. Effect of wealth tax. Wealth tax is imposed on the value of a person's stock of wealth at a point of time, say at the end of the financial year. The wealth tax does not discriminate against risky investment. In this way, it promotes economic development. By enabling the government not to raise the income tax rates too high, the wealth tax encourages investment in modern industries. Page number 811. Another obvious effect of wealth tax is the reduction of economic inequalities by reducing the size of the inherited wealth. The tax is borne by the persons on whom it is levied. It reduces the size of unearned income. The wealth tax discourages productive investment. It influences the supply of money capital. It encourages consumption and discourages saving or capital formation. The tendency to purchase non-durable goods will increase. Incidence of property tax. The distinction between wealth tax and property tax may be clearly understood. The wealth tax is imposed on the net wealth of an individual. In calculating the net wealth, outstanding claims of others are deducted for the gross value of the assets. But the property tax is levied on the gross value of the property irrespective of the ownership, and no deduction is allowed for the outstanding claims of others against the property. Property includes real estate like lands and buildings, machinery, inventories, household effects, jewelry, bank balances, bonds, etc. In actual practice, only the real estate like land and buildings are taxed. In the case of property used for consumption, example, jewelry, house and household effects, there is no shifting of the tax and the incidence is on the person on whom the tax is levied. But when the property is used for production, the producers will attempt to shift it to the consumers. But much depends on the elasticity of demand and supply. We shall therefore consider now incidence of land taxation and tax on buildings. Incidence of land taxation. The value of land depends on two sets of factors. A. Natural factors like the fertility of the soil, the situation of the land, some other natural conditions, and B. Investment of capital in drainage schemes, anti-erosion measure, irrigation facilities, and other measures necessary to increase and sustain productivity. The tax depending on the first set of factors is a tax on economic rent and has a tendency to fall on the owners. The landlord cannot shift it to the tenant, for economic rent is determined by factors independent of land tax. The owner is supposed already to be charging rent, fully measuring the superiority of his land over the marginal land. But in case through ignorance, indifference or indulgence, he has not been charging full economic rent, he will, when the tax is imposed, sharply look around and take it in the slack. To this extent, the tax is shifted to the tenant. Tax of this nature, that is, the tax on economic rent, cannot be passed on to the consumer, for the consumer can only be reached through the price. We know that economic rent does not enter into price. The rising or lowering of the rent does not affect price. The fact that the tax is paid by the occupier makes no difference. If he pays it in the first instance, he can deduct it when he pays the rent to the owner. Thus, tax on economic rent is borne by the owner of the land and not by the tenant or the consumer of the product. But where the owner can vary his investment in land, we will reduce this investment when the tax is imposed. This will affect the yield and hence the price of the commodity. In this case, that is, in the case of improvements, it is shifted to the consumer. Tax on building sites also tends to be thrown on those owners of sites who enjoy surplus income on account of more favorable situation of their sites. Can the land tax be shifted to a prospective purchaser of the land? No, the tendency is that it will be borne by the present owner. The purchaser, while purchasing land, will be in mind that he will have to pay the tax. He will consequently offer less price. The tax is thus capitalized or absorbed in the lower price that the land will command. This will happen to the extent that future tax payments can be accurately forecast. But there is also a neutralizing tendency. Future increases in land values may also be anticipated and more price offered. Page number 812. Incidence of tax on buildings. There are two parties in immediate contact with each other so far as housing is concerned, that is, the owner and the occupier. If the tax is imposed on the owner, he will try to raise the house rent and thus shift the tax to the occupier or the tenant. But he cannot do this during the currency of the lease. Further, there may be a rent law controlling rent and forbidding the landlord from raising the rent. Even if he can raise the rent, the tenant may shift to some other house, preferring smaller accommodation to paying a higher rent. In such cases, therefore, the incidence will be on the landlord, at any rate for some time. But the effect will be that building houses for letting out may not remain a paying proposition.
A heavy tax will check buildings' activity, and the remuneration of the builders and of other people engaged in the trade may fall.
The demand for building sites may decrease. If they try to sell off, the new purchaser will bear in mind the tax and offer correspondingly less. But in course of time, the supply of houses will fall off and the rents must rise, thus shifting the burden to some extent to the tenants. Thus, the tax may fall partly on the owner and partly on the builder and partly on the occupier. If, on the other hand, the tax is imposed on the occupier, it will tend to stick to him. It is not easy to find a new house, nor so convenient to shift. One likes to stay on where one is. The demand for a house is inelastic. The landlord, therefore, is in a much stronger position. The tax will thus stay where its first impact is. But if the occupier is a shopkeeper, he may be able to shift the tax to his customers in the neighborhood by raising a bit the prices of the commodities he sells. We must remember, however, that the development of the means of communication and transport brings the traveling salesman to our very door and weakens the grip of the neighboring store. We shall thus conclude that the tax on buildings will fall generally on the occupier, but under certain circumstances may be shifted to the owner, the building, or the consumer. Incidence of death duty. In almost all advanced countries, death duties form an important part of the tax system. Death duties take two forms: estate duty and succession duty. The estate duty is levied on the total value of the asset, that is, movable and immovable property left by the deceased, irrespective of the relationship of the successor. It is graduated with reference to the total value of the property. The succession duty varies with the relationship of the beneficiary to the deceased. It is graduated on the basis of the windfall element, which increases with the distance of relationship. Further, it takes into consideration individual share of the successor and not the total value as an estate duty. Death duties are justified on the ground that the government is said to be a silent partner in the creation of wealth. It is aimed at reducing inequalities of wealth and concentration of economic power in the hands of a few persons. By reducing unearned income from wealth, this tax makes for equality of opportunity. But the death duties may reduce savings by discouraging savings to avoid a heavy death duty. This tax also reduces the ability to save on the part of the heirs. Thus, capital formation is adversely affected. The death duty tends to disrupt small enterprises because they are forced to sell themselves to larger firms in order to pay the tax. This promotes the growth of monopolies. By encouraging the formation of trusts in order to avoid substantial tax liabilities, the death duties favor conservative investment policies. The willingness to work may be affected by death duties. Page number 813. The willingness to work may be affected by death duties. If a person wants to leave to his heirs assets of certain size after the payment of tax, he may have to work harder. On the other hand, if the marginal rate of tax rises with every increase in his estate, he will tend to work less. It is possible that the rich people may dissipate their wealth during their lives, but if they have greater concern for their heirs, they may consume less and save more. If, however, the marginal tax rate is very high, it may encourage consumption and discourage saving. The transfer of property at death may disrupt small business, which may not be in the interest of the community. By reducing the successor's amount of wealth, death duty will decrease their consumption and investment and adversely affect the level of income and employment. Where is the incidence of death duties? Is the incidence on the deceased or the beneficiary, that is, the successor? The owner is dead and it is said that death pays all debts. He can be taxed no more. No further burden can be placed on him. If, however, he had got insured to pay such a tax, he certainly bore it when he paid the insurance premium. In the absence of any such anticipation by the owner of the property when he was alive, the tax will obviously fall on the beneficiary. Incidence of tax on monopoly. The question of incidence is a part of the larger question of the theory of value. As value determination differs in the case of monopoly from the value determination under competitive condition, the incidence of a tax on monopoly works out differently. The monopoly tax may be A. independent of the output of the monopolized product, or B. it may vary with the output, that is, increase or decrease with the output. A. when the tax is independent of the quantity produced, it may either be lump sum tax on the monopolist or a percentage of the monopoly net revenue or profit. In both these cases, it will fall on the monopolist. He cannot shift it to the consumer. This could be done by raising the price. But he is already supposed to have fixed a price which yielded him the maximum monopoly net revenue. If it had been possible for him to raise the price consistent with the policy of maximizing his profit, he would have done it already. Any alteration in the price thus would be at the expense of his profit. That being the case, he must now pay the tax out of his own profit. He will get maximum profit now after paying the tax by leaving the selling price unchanged and the consumer unaffected. It is possible that instead of recalculating how he would maximize his profit after paying the tax, he may simply put up the price, shifting the tax to the consumer. But by doing so, he may have reduced his monopoly profit. He may prefer this to a rather greater profit at the expense of a greater effort. In case, however, he has been charging less out of consideration for consumers' welfare than what he would charge for maximizing his profit, he will, when the tax is imposed, take in the slack. To this extent, the burden of the tax will be shifted to the consumers. B. Now let us see what happens when the tax varies directly or inversely with the quantity of the commodity produced. In this case, as discussed in the previous section, elasticity of demand and supply and the influenced. In this case, as discussed in the previous section, elasticities of demand and supply and the influence of the laws of returns will have to be taken into account. The tax will enter into the cost of production. It will mean an addition to the cost of production. Taxing of the commodity, therefore, raises the price, which will tend to reduce the demand. If, however, the demand is inelastic, it cannot be appreciably reduced and the tax will be borne by the consumer. If the demand is elastic, the consumers may buy less when the tax has raised the price. In this case, the tax will partly be borne by the monopolist. Instead of facing a decline in demand, the monopolist may reduce the price and decide to bear the tax himself. If the supply is more elastic, then the producer is in a stronger position. Thus, if the demand is more elastic than the supply, the consumer will bear less burden of the tax, and if the supply is more elastic than the demand, then the producer will bear less. If the production of the commodity obeys the law of increasing returns, the reduction in output consequent upon the imposition of a tax will raise the price more than if it were subject to the law of diminishing returns. The burden on the consumer in the former case will be greater than in the latter case. When the marginal costs are constant and the demand curve facing the monopolist is a straight line, then, according to the theory of monopoly price, the price of the taxed commodity will be raised by half the amount of the tax. Under competition, it would have risen by the full amount of the tax. Page number 814. In case the demand curve is concave, the rise in price will be greater than this. Where the demand curve is so concave as to make the marginal revenue curve parallel to the demand curve over the relevant range, the price will be raised by the full amount of the tax. In cases, however, the demand curve is not only concave but indicant elasticity, the ratio between price and the marginal cost will be constant. The marginal revenue being necessarily less than price, the slope of the marginal revenue curve will be less than that of the demand curve, so that the price will rise by more than the tax. If, in order to stimulate production, the rate of the tax varies inversely with the output, then the monopolist will be tempted to produce more and keep the price low. The burden of the tax will thus be entirely on the monopolist, who will in fact be transferring a part of his monopoly profit to the consumers. The fact is that owing to the exceptional ability of the monopolist to manipulate the price and control the market, the incidence of a monopoly tax is uncertain. AC equals average cost, MC equals marginal cost, AR equals average revenue, MR equals marginal revenue, ACT equals average cost after tax, MCT equals marginal cost after tax. 1. Before tax, the equilibrium is reached at a point where MR equals MC, which determines price, and OQ amount of quantity, OP price before tax. TR minus TC equals pi 1. TR equals total revenue, TC equals total cost, pi equals profit. Rectangle OPMQ minus rectangle OSRQ equals rectangle PMRS. 2. After imposition of tax on monopoly, the equilibrium changes. The equilibrium is achieved at point where MR equals MCT, which determines OP 1 price and OQ 1 quantity. TR minus TC to the base of T equals pi 2. Rectangle OP 1 IQ 1 minus rectangle OK JQ 1 equals rectangle P 1 IJK. Pi 1 in brackets profit before tax, pi 2 in brackets profit after tax. Therefore rectangle PMRS is greater than P1IJK. A monopolist bears some amount of tax and some amount he shifts on the consumers or buyers. Therefore, the rise in prices is only PP1 or marginal. Incidence of a commodity tax. Taxes on commodities may take different forms. A. A tax on manufacture or production of a commodity called excise duties. B. A tax on sales of a particular commodity or general sales tax. And C. Import or export of commodity known as customs duty. A tax on a commodity tends to be shifted from the producer forward to the consumer and from the consumer backward to the producer. A tax on production of a commodity tends to raise its price and will therefore be normally borne by the consumer. But a tax on consumption is likely to check consumption and tends to be shifted backward to the producer. The extent to which a commodity tax will actually be shifted will depend upon the nature of demand and supply curves. If demand is inelastic, as is the case with the necessities of life, the people must buy the commodity. The producer will be in a strong position and almost the entire burden of the tax will be shifted on to the consumer. But in the case of elastic demand, the people will buy less. In that case, the price will not rise by the full amount of the tax and the tax will be partly borne by the producer. The tax on a commodity will therefore be borne partly by the buyer and partly by the sellers. How much exactly? It will depend on the degree of elasticity of demand or supply. In the same manner, if the supply is inelastic, as in the case of a perishable commodity, the seller cannot withdraw the supply. His position is weak. The tax will stick to him. In the case of elastic supply, he can shift the burden on to the consumers. As a rule, the consumer bears a smaller part of the tax when the demand is more elastic than he does when the supply is more elastic than the demand. It is possible that the price may not rise at all. This will happen when the consumer has been able to discover an untaxed supply of the commodity or a satisfactory untaxed substitute. In this case, the entire burden of the tax will fall on the producer or the seller. Page number 815. On the supply side, the laws of returns will also exert their influence. The taxing of a commodity tends to check its demand, which in its turn will check production. Now, if the industry is subject to the law of increasing returns, the reduced production will be obtained at a higher cost, and in the case of the law of diminishing returns, at a lower cost. In the former case, the price will be higher than in the latter, with a corresponding burden on the consumer. Much also depends on the amount and the method of taxation. Nobody bothers about a small tax. No producer would like to annoy his customers for a paltry sum. He would cheerfully bear it himself. Only when the tax is heavy will the shifting take place. A tax on marginal output will raise the price and not the one on the surplus output. The nature of the commodity also will make a difference. A tax on a commodity like sugar gets rapidly adjusted and shifted. But a tax on a house cannot be so readily shifted, for rent is fixed for a period and during the currency of the lease no change can be made. Other factors which govern the course of shifting of a commodity tax are whether competition is perfect and whether labor and capital are freely mobile. Only in case of free and unfettered competition can the tax be passed on to the consumer, otherwise it will stick to the producer. If labor and capital are freely mobile, it will add to the ability of the producer to shift the burden on to the consumer. If, on the other hand, large fixed capital is locked up in the industry, the position of the producer is correspondingly weakened and the probability is that the tax burden will be borne by him. He cannot withdraw his capital. He must continue in the field even though he may be losing for a time. Since the demand for a taxed commodity is reduced, productive resources may be shifted from the taxed to the non-taxed industries. Thus, the investment pattern will change to the disadvantage of the consumer. Hence, economic welfare is reduced. Also, economic inequalities are accentuated because commodity taxes are regressive, unless they are imposed on undesirable or injurious products. Diagrammatic representation. How the burden of a commodity tax is distributed between the buyers and sellers or producers according to ratio of elasticities of demand and supply is shown in the following diagram. Diagram figure number 64.1. In this diagram, DD is the demand curve and SS is the supply curve. They intersect at P and MP is the price determined. Now suppose the sales tax per unit of the commodity has been levied. As a result, its supply curve will shift upward equal to the tax per unit because the tax will be added to the supply price. The new supply curve will be S' cuts the demand curve at Q, and therefore now TQ is the price determined, which is higher than the old price PM by RQ. Hence, RQ is the burden of the tax borne by the consumer, even though the tax per unit is LQ. Therefore, RL or in brackets LQ minus QR close brackets is the burden of the tax borne by the seller, or he has RL price less than before, or PM being the first price. We can show that the splitting of the burden of the tax LQ into RL on the seller and RQ on the buyer is equal to the ratio of elasticities of demand and supply, thus RL by RQ equals burden of the tax on the seller or producer by burden of the tax on the buyer or consumer. Elasticity of demand equals proportionate decrease in the quantity demanded by proportionate increase in price equals MT by OM divided by RQ by MP equals MT by OM into MP by RQ. Elasticity of demand equals proportionate decrease in the quantity demanded divided by proportionate increase in price equals MT by OM divided by RQ by MP equals MT by OM into MP by RQ. This is the first equation. Elasticity of supply equals proportionate decrease in the quantity supplied divided by proportionate decrease in price equals MT by OM divided by RQ by MP equals MT by OM into MP by RL. This is the second equation. Page number 816. Elasticity of demand by elasticity of supply equals MT by OM into MP by RQ, which is equation number 1 above. Elasticity of demand divided by elasticity of supply equals equation number 1 divided by equation number 2, that is MT by OM into MP by RQ divided by MT by OM into MP by RL equals MP by RQ. We have seen above that RL is the burden of the tax on the seller and RQ is the burden of the tax on the buyer, on consumer. Hence, RL by RQ equals burden of the tax on the seller divided by burden of the tax on the consumer equals elasticity of demand divided by elasticity of supply. It is clear that the limits within which a commodity tax is shared between the buyers and sellers depends on the elasticities of demand and supply. If the demand is inelastic, as is the case with the necessities of life, the people must buy them whatever the increase in the price as a result of imposition of tax. In such a situation, the seller's position is stronger and the entire burden of the tax will be shifted to the consumer. But if the demand is elastic, it will contract when the price rises. Hence, price will not rise to the full amount of the tax. Therefore, a part of the tax will be borne by the sellers or producers and a part by the buyers or consumers. But exactly how much? This will depend on the ratio of elasticity of demand and elasticity of supply. In the same manner, if the supply is inelastic, as is the case with perishable commodities, the sellers cannot reduce the supply as price rises and their position is weaker. In such a situation, the burden of the tax will be on the sellers or producers and it cannot be shifted to the purchaser or consumers. On the contrary, if the supply is elastic, then the sellers can withdraw the supply if the price does not suit them. In such a situation, the burden of the tax will be on the buyers or consumers. Conclusion. Thus, incidence of a commodity tax is a very complicated affair. It is a part of a large problem of price determination. There are various conflicting influences on price. We say that generally a tax on a commodity tends to be borne by the consumer, but this tendency may or may not be actually realized. Unless the price is affected, the consumer is not touched, and he is touched only to the extent that the price is raised by the imposition of the tax. Here is a table which has five columns. The first column is the elasticity of demand. The second column is total tax. The third column is burden on buyer increase. The fourth column is burden on seller in price. And the fifth column is remarks. 1. The elasticity of demand ED equals 0. The total tax is PP to the base of 1. The burden on the buyer increase is PP to the base of 1. The burden on the seller in price is nil. Remarks, complete burden on the buyer. 2. When ED is less than 1, the total tax is MN. The burden on the buyer is MT. The burden on the seller in price is TN. Remarks, MT is greater than TN. More on buyer and less on seller. 3. When the elasticity of demand ED equals 1, the total tax is RS. The burden on the buyer is RX. The burden on the seller is XS. Remarks, RX equals XS. Equal burden on both. 4. The elasticity of demand when ED is greater than 1, the total tax is GH. The burden on the buyer is GI. The burden on the seller is IH. Remarks is GI is less than IH. More on seller and less on the buyer. 5. When the elasticity of demand ED equals infinity, the total tax is KJ. The burden on the buyer is nil. The burden on the seller is KJ. Remarks, complete burden on the seller. Page number 817. On y-axis, price, and on x-axis, quantity demanded and supplied. Incidence of sales tax. The sales tax is levied on the turnover, profits or no profits. Its incidence is a complicated affair because it covers commodities of widely divergent nature. If the demand for a commodity is inelastic, its price can be raised and the tax will then be shifted to the consumer to that extent. But if the demand is elastic, it may be shifted partly to the consumer and may remain partly on the seller. If the supply is perfectly elastic, the entire burden of the tax will fall upon the buyer, and if the supply is perfectly inelastic, the entire burden will be on the seller. If the supply is only relatively elastic or inelastic, then the tax burden will be shared between the buyer and the seller. There are possibilities of incidence shifting forward or to the buyers and backward or to the seller of factors of production in the long run. For instance, if the demand falls, the output will be reduced and demand for factors may go down reducing their reward. The sales tax may make heavy inroads into profits, which may lead to retrenchment in staff and management, restrict enterprise and employment, leaving some business premises unoccupied. Thus, its incidence may fall upon the employees, management and landlords. Sales tax indeed hits a large number of people of direct types. Incidence of import and export duties. Import duties are generally and almost exclusively borne by the home consumer. The duty paid by the importer is added to the price that he charges from the next buyer, and so on. The duty is ultimately shifted to the consumer. Only in very rare cases the burden of such duties may be shifted to the foreign producer. If, for instance, our demand for the imported product is elastic, so that we may or may not buy it, and the supply is inelastic, and the foreign producer has no alternative market, then in such a case the burden can be shifted to the foreign producer. But these conditions are rarely present. The import duty must be borne by the home consumer. The export duty is similarly borne by the exporter. The price in the world markets is fixed so far as he is concerned. No individual exporter is in a position to influence the world price. But here again, we can imagine a situation in which the exporter is in an exceptionally strong position, so that the export duty can be shifted to the foreign purchaser. For example, we may have a monopoly of the supply of a commodity, and the demand of the foreigners for our product may be inelastic, whereas so many other alternative markets may be open to us. In such circumstances, we can certainly make the foreigners pay the export duty by raising the price of the commodity by the full amount of the duty. But such conditions are very rare, and unless they are present, the export duty must be borne by the exporter. Dalton lays down the rule in this connection thus: taxes on imports and exports may be regarded as obstacles to exchange, and in accordance with the preceding theory, the direct money burden of any such obstacle is divided between the two parties of the exchange in inverse proportion to the elasticities of their respective demand. In other words, it is divided in direct proportion to the urgencies of their respective needs, which are satisfied by the exchange. On y-axis, price, and on x-axis, quantity demanded and supplied. Sigma D equals zero. Elasticity of demand is perfectly inelastic. Sigma D is less than 1, elasticity of demand is relatively inelastic. Sigma D equals 1, elasticity of demand is equal to 1, or unit elastic demand. Sigma D is greater than 1, the elasticity of demand is relatively elastic. Sigma D equals infinity, the elasticity of demand is perfectly elastic. SS is original supply curve, and S1S1 is supply curve after imposition of tax. Page number 818. Effect of taxation on production, consumption and distribution. In an earlier chapter, chapter number 61, we discussed the effect of public expenditure on production and distribution. Let us now study the effects of taxes on production and distribution. Effect on production. Production is affected by taxes in two ways. A. By affecting ability to work, save and invest. And B. By affecting the desire to work, save and invest. Effect on the ability to work, save and invest. This effect will depend on so many factors, including the nature of the tax and the reaction of the taxpayers to the tax. We can take a few instances. A tax on the necessaries of life will obviously affect the workers' productive efficiency and hence reduce production. This adverse effect on production can be avoided by exempting the goods of mass consumption or tax them at very low rates. A heavy tax on income tends to reduce the ability to save and invest on the part of the individuals. A tax on the net profits of business firms will reduce their ability to save and invest. A decrease in investment is bound to affect adversely the level of output in the country. But increase in government expenditure may offset the decrease in investment in the private sector. In an inflationary situation, taxes will tend to contain inflationary pressures, and in a normal situation, high taxation will result in the fall of the price level and decline in output. Effect on the desire to work, save and invest. Normally, taxation induces the people to work harder, earn more, save more and invest more to increase their income or enjoy the same income after tax. Some taxes have no adverse effect. Example, a tax on windfalls, inherited wealth, tax on monopolies irrespective of the output. Import duties too increase the domestic producer's desire to work, save and invest. Low export duty may also encourage production. Every duty or sales tax may not affect the people's desire to work, save and invest if they are spending only a small portion of their income on the taxed commodities. But if they are spending a large proportion of their income on such commodities, savings will fall and a fall in demand may also reduce output. High marginal rates of income are likely to affect adversely the taxpayers' desire to work, save and invest. The government usually allows developmental rebates, tax holidays, higher depreciation allowances to minimize the adverse effect. Expenditure tax tends to generate deflationary tendencies, and by reducing profit, it adversely affects the desire to save and invest. As compared with income tax, the death duties do not adversely affect the desire to work, save and invest. But if it is intended to leave a certain size of property to the heirs, the desire to work and save will be adversely affected. The effect on the desire to work, save and invest will largely depend on the reaction of the taxpayers. This reaction varies from individual to individual. It depends on the individual's elasticity of demand for income, that is, individual's keenness to earn an income. When an individual's demand for income is relatively elastic, the tax will lessen his desire to work and save. The effect will be the opposite if this demand is relatively inelastic. This is actually the case in the real world. Hence, a tax will induce the taxpayers to work more, save more and invest more, especially those who want to maintain a certain standard of living or earn certain amount on their savings or who want to improve their social status or acquire power or those who wish to provide comfort and security in old age and so on. Production pattern. Taxes may modify the pattern of production. Entrepreneurs may avoid the production of goods which are taxed. There is likely to be a diversion of resources from some sectors of the economy to others. For instance, if luxuries are heavily taxed, production of necessities may be stimulated. There will be diversion from the present to the future if consumption is taxed and savings are encouraged. Effect on income distribution. Modern governments levy taxes not merely to raise revenue, but also to levy such taxes as would reduce economic inequalities. It is recognized that if economic welfare of the masses is to be promoted, incomes and wealth in the country must be more evenly distributed. The effect of taxes on income distribution depends on the type of taxes and the rate of taxes. Taxation of goods of mass consumption are regressive and redistribute incomes in favor of the rich. But if such commodities are exempted and luxuries are taxed and taxation is made progressive, then incomes will be redistributed in favor of the poor. The direct taxes like income tax, wealth tax, death duties and property tax levied at progressive rates tend to reduce inequalities of income and wealth. Page number 819. The direct taxes like income tax, wealth tax, death duties and property tax levied at progressive rates tend to reduce inequalities of income and wealth. It may, however, be emphasized that taxation alone cannot reduce economic inequalities. But levy of progressive direct taxes combined with public expenditure, mainly for the benefit of the poor, may go in a long way in lessening economic inequalities. However, extremely high progressive rates may adversely affect production. Effect on consumption. Taxes can affect consumption in a number of ways. By imposing a heavy tax on a consumable good which is injurious to health, its consumption can be checked. It raises its price and reduces the demand for it. Similarly, by taxing luxuries, their consumption can be decreased and the resources diverted to the production of goods of mass consumption. Taxes on necessaries are not considered desirable since their prices for the poor people will rise and their standard of living will fall. Conclusion. Thus, taxation plays a regulatory role. It regulates consumption, production, and income distribution. Taxation alone, however, may not be able to completely regulate them. It may have to be supplemented by other measures of control to make its regulatory role effective. Modern theory of shifting and incidence. Various theories have been put forward to explain the shifting and incidence of taxation. Earlier theories. The earlier theories may be classified into A. Concentration theory or surplus theory and B. Diversion or diffusion theory. According to the concentration theory or the surplus theory, each tax tends to concentrate on a particular class of people who happen to enjoy surplus from their products. The diffusion theory held, on the other hand, that the tax eventually got diffused in the entire society. That is, the final resting place of the tax is not one, but multiple. The process of diffusion took place through shifting or through the process of exchange. Modern theory. The concentration theory and the diffusion theory are only partially true. Actually, there is both concentration and diffusion of taxes according to the conditions present. The modern theory seeks to analyze the conditions which bring about concentration or diffusion. Take a tax on a commodity payable by a producer. A producer has a dual price relationship. He has price relationship with the customers through selling price as well as with the suppliers of factors of production through purchase price. The producer will try to shift the tax to the customers by raising the price or to the factors by reducing the price he has to pay. The former is called forward shifting and the latter backward shifting. It is possible that the producer is able to shift it partly to the customers and partly to the factors of production and in this way shake off the entire tax burden. Backward shifting is by and large difficult because factor remuneration is determined by market forces of demand and supply. As regards forward shifting, we notice that the producer enjoys surplus in the form of profits and the consumers enjoy consumer surplus. The producer wants to retain his entire surplus whereas the consumer resists a reduction in his surplus. The producer will threaten to cut the production and the consumer to cut consumption. In this way, the shifting will depend on the conditions of demand and supply. Page number 820. Key terms: impact and incidence of tax, effects of tax on production and distribution, shifting of tax. Questions. 1. What are the factors on which incidence of tax depends? Trace the incidence of estate duty and inheritance tax. 2. Distinguish between A. Impact, B. Incidence, 3. Effects of a tax. Briefly discuss the general principles determining the incidence of indirect taxes. 3. Distinguish between incidence and effects of taxation. Discuss the effects of the following taxes on distribution and production. A. Excise duty on sugar, B. Corporation tax, and C. Estate duty. 4. Explain with the help of a diagram how a taxpayer is better off with an income tax of an equal amount rather than a commodity tax. 5. Explain the principles governing the incidence of commodity taxation. Examine the conditions under which the price of a taxed commodity rises. A. By more than, and B. By less than the amount of the tax. 6. Discuss the incidence of the following taxes. 1. Expenditure tax, 2. Export duty on tea, and 3. Entertainment tax. 7. Discuss carefully the nature and direction of the incidence of sales tax, indicating the factors on which these depend. 8. What is incidence of taxation? Examine the incidence of income tax and excise duties. 9. Examine the effects of A. 10% tax on all rents paid for the use of land, B. A 5% tax on the value of all land, and C. A 5% tax on all urban land.